So we're going to review, because tonight we're going to pick up on resentments, which we started last week, and we're going to follow through on some powerful information that changed my life. I went to meetings for years and never understood the directions for me to be free of anger. And we said the third step prayer on page 63, and we did that because, at least I did it, because I couldn't live anymore the way I was. I couldn't run my life anymore, and I wanted to change. I wanted things to change. And I made a decision that there was a power available to me that could change my life. And if I needed to turn my life over to that power, I had to stop playing God. And I made a decision that He was going to direct my thinking and my actions. And I said the third step prayer that He relieved me of the bondage of self, because I couldn't do it myself. And take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. And I think we're all an example of that. You know, when we celebrate our birthdays and when we show that we've changed as a human being, it's only through God's power. We don't take the credit. The thing we take credit for is seeking God and letting go of the things in me that are blocking me from God. And it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure I was ready. This is a powerful step. This is that I'm going to abandon myself utterly to Him, all of me, utterly. Now, that's hard to do, right? And we don't even know how to do it after we say the prayer. But we want to do that. And then it says, next, I launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning. So once I've made this decision in step three, nothing will change until I take action. And the first step is a personal house cleaning. And I have to clean my house so God can direct that house. If the house is full of my self-centered thinking and the debris that I've accumulated from a life run on self-will, how can God direct me? If I'm angry all day long and full of resentments and fear, God can't direct me. My fear is directing me. My anger is directing me. And I'm not even directing it. Those things, the character defects, are directing my life. It was a horrible way to live, and I don't want to live that way anymore. Does anybody remember at the end how bad it was? And in the beginning, when you're sober and you don't have program and you don't have God, how uneasy you were. Somebody said the worst thing is to be sober without God and without the program, not the fellowship, but the program, the steps. And the fellowship is designed to bring me to the program and to help me relate to God. We talked today at the noon meeting about the we. We do it as we, and then somebody said the we is the fellowship in me, and then the we becomes me and God. And that's powerful stuff when you think about it. And it says, I've made this decision, I make it every day. But in the beginning, it's a vital and crucial step. I have to make the decision, or else I'm not going to follow through on it. But we read tonight and how it works. Are we willing to go to any lengths to change? Am I willing to let go of my old ideas? I've stood at the turning point. Am I going to turn myself to God with complete abandon? Well, if I say yes, then guess what they say? We suggest these steps, because these steps are the way to do it. And it says, I have to have a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in myself which has been blocking me from God, and actually blocking me from serenity and peace. And liquor was but a symptom, because if I'm blocked, then liquor becomes the solution to my living a life run on self-will. Now, if it's working for you, fine. But if liquor stopped working, drugs stopped working, your life is completely unmanageable. You don't want to go on like that. You want to be full of fear and angry all the time. Then you're ready to take step four. And it says next and at once. So any time between next and at once is when you do step four. You don't want to live sober too long with the stuff in your head that caused you to drink. So this idea of, you know, taking your time or something, the people who say that don't understand the disease. Because the disease, like Chris said, is when we're sober. That's when we have alcoholism. When I drink and I make a mess of my life from alcohol, that's the effect produced by alcohol. And sober without God, it's not pretty for me. And so I had to get down to the causes and conditions of being blocked from God. So I start a personal inventory, and this is step four. And they talk about, if I don't take an inventory regularly, I'm going to go broke. Well, I was broke. My life was broken. And I have to take the facts, find the facts, and face the facts so that I can discover the truth about the stock and trade. Now, successful businesses are able to market the things that make money and not market the things that lose money. And they don't accumulate in their warehouses the stuff that nobody wants. Target's not accumulating more of all the stuff that they didn't sell last year. They're not ordering more of it and shipping it. They don't want that. They want the new stuff. And I don't want to hold on to the stuff in me that was causing me to be broke. Now it says one object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods. So I have to see what was damaged and unsaleable in my personality. And then I have to get rid of it promptly without regret. Now, I'm the only one that can let go of it promptly and without regret. And that's the things that I do. And then God removes it if I'm willing to let go. And so it says, if I'm going to be successful, I cannot fool myself about values. Now, I don't know about you, but I fooled myself about a lot of values for a long time. I thought my motives were good. You know, I thought that I was trying to do the best. And if they just understood and if people just behaved and did what I wanted, life would have been grand. But I didn't see the truth about it. So here's what we're going to do in the fourth step, which is the beginning of the pathway to God. And it says, I did exactly the same thing with my life. I'm going to look at my life and take stock honestly. And this will be a real eye-opener for people who are new. And it's amazing how... I can't even, you know, it was so long ago when I did this, but it was amazing how I could see things so differently once I wrote it down and went over it with someone. And it took all the power away from me. I'm going to search out the flaws in me which caused my failure. Now, I knew the flaws in everybody else that caused my failure, but that didn't help me. That just kept me sick, and that just kept me separated from God. I'm going to search out the flaws in me which caused my failure. Now, I was convinced that self manifested in various ways, and we read that in 6063. If you haven't read it, please read it, and read it in the first person. Defeated me. I'm going to look at the manifestations of self. So we're really inventorying in the fourth step is the manifestations of what is manifest when I'm in self. And there are three things that are manifest. Anger, fear, and I'm harming others in my conduct, especially in the areas of sex. And this defeated me. It defeated me, myself, and the manifestations of that was anger, fear, and my shame and guilt, and I harm people. And so it says resentment is the number one offender. And a lot of people argue, how long are you angry before it's a resentment? What is it, a resentment, and all this. Resentment is where I was judging, I was threatened by something, I got angry about something, I was disturbed by something in the past. And there was a lot of it. I see people who have drank for 30 years, they got five names. I said, you can get five names driving to work. But they don't see it. They don't see it. It's not that they're good or bad. They don't see it. It's where you were bothered or threatened. Now, the ones we really want to work on the fourth step are these major resentments that we have for people in our lives that are keeping us really ill. You know, exes, family members, people at work. But if you look through your whole life, you'll see how you were disturbed a lot by so many people for so many things, and they were so silly. And it says resentment is the number one offender. So, and they talk on the next page about anger. Now, resentment is re-feeling anger. So let's say somebody did something to you when you're 12 years old, and you're still thinking about that, and it's dominating your life. That's something we need to deal with. If you have people that you've had relationships with, that they're still causing a lot of pain and anger, they have to be dealt with. But when you do this inventory, you can look at your life. And one of the advantages is that you see how angry you were all the time, how disturbed you were your whole life. because you saw it as self and you were disturbed, and we're going to see why. We're going to look at the columns. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else, so being angry destroys me. If I get angry today, am I going to drink over it? I don't know. But it's going to block me from God when I'm angry. And if I stay angry all day, I wasted a day. And then if I carry it over to tomorrow, then I'm angry when I start the day, and then I'm going to get angry at something else because God isn't directing my thinking. So anger is very dangerous, and it destroys more alcoholics, and from it stems all form of spiritual disease. Now, last week I said that we're at dis-ease with the Spirit. We're not at ease with the Spirit. We're at dis-ease. We're not connected to the Spirit. And when we're at dis-ease from the Spirit, we have no power in our life to live. And it says we've been spiritually sick, we've been mentally and physically ill. But when the spiritual illness is overcome, I straighten out mentally and physically. And so what we need is to overcome our spiritual malady. It's a spiritual disease. We have to overcome that. And what is the malady? The malady is that I'm playing God and I'm separated from God. And I have no access to God's power. And I've blocked it out. And when that happens, I'm on my own. I'm managing my life, and it doesn't get pretty. And the sad thing is that we make the choice to do that. God doesn't block himself out or unplug his power. We do it. And what we're looking at is when we do it, we get angry. And all we have to do is take these tools to deal with anger, and we're back and connected to God. So the first instruction, dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. So here's what they say. You list people, institutional principles with whom you were angry through your whole life. It doesn't even say you have to be angry with them right at this moment. Anybody you were angry at. You know, they didn't pick me for the baseball team when I was 13. Sorry, I'm taping this. I have to be nice. But, you know, how could they not do that? Well, I probably wasn't good enough. That's what I realized after doing inventory and being angry about it for 30 years. I probably wasn't good enough, and it wasn't a big deal to them. It was only a big deal to me because I was worried what people would think. And it affected my self-esteem. Were their teachers? Were their relationships? Were their people you were at the school with, you worked with, family members, relatives? And it says, you list them, people, institutions, or principles, the IRS. Some people don't like the Ten Commandments. Some people don't like God. You know, and that could be a principle, that there's a higher power. It says, I ask myself why I was angry. This is the second column. It's not very complicated, why I was angry, and you list them. Now, the truth is, we don't really care why you were angry. It seems real to you, but it may not even be true. So when you write it down and then you go over with somebody, you can look at these things and see if they were even true or if they were real or imagined, or if maybe you distorted them. You took them out of context because you wanted to twist things because of things you did. So you put them on paper, you try to be succinct. I had one person, he listed one name, and he wrote 3 pages on why he was angry. It was quite a bit, but that won't help him. Make it succinct. And it says, why we were angry. In most cases, now this is the third column. This is where fear is tied to all your anger. And fear is when you're playing God. So when we're out and actually looking, the way they did it in the big book, when you're inventorying your mind, is you start with the external, the anger and the thing, and you work back to the fear and the self-centeredness. It says, in most cases, it was found that my self-esteem, that's what I think of myself, good or bad, usually dependent on what I think you think of me, and is it threatened? My pocketbook, my money, is it threatened? My ambitions, what I think I need in life to be happy, is it threatened? My personal relationships, including sex, was it hurt or threatened? Now, threaten is really a form of fear. If you threaten my ambitions, I'm going to get afraid I'm not going to get it. If you're threatening my self-esteem, I'm going to afraid I'm not good enough. If you threaten my pocketbook, I'm afraid I'm not going to get the money I need. See, so the fear is tied on with the threatened or hurt. So I get hurt or threatened when I'm self-centered and I'm going to fill my ambitions in my pocketbook, how I feel about myself, how I feel about relationships, my ambitions, my security. If I do that, and it's not coming from these other people, I get angry at them. So it says, so we were sore, we were burned up. So whenever you got sore, whenever you got burned up, you could be burned up waiting in line. You're at Walgreens, there's one person, she's got 80 coupons. You got one carton of milk. You know, it doesn't have to be major things. It could be simple things that get us burned or sore. A lot of people get road rage. My wife says I cause it. I don't happen to get it, but road rage is just, you're not getting your way on the road. Don't they know how important I am? How can they cut me off? I can't drive 50 miles an hour. I gotta be somewhere. Of course, you could have left earlier. And so you're sore, you're burned up. And alcoholics are sore and burned up a lot because when you're playing God and running the world, they don't have the script. They don't know that I can't wait in line at Walgreens for somebody with 80 coupons because I'm Michael the Magnificent. They don't understand that. They didn't get that script. They should have just moved aside and let me go. Now, it sounds ridiculous, but we think that way. Anybody here not think that way? But it doesn't come out that way. It comes that they're stupid. Look at them with the things. Can't they be faster? So it's called a grudge list. We set opposite each name our injuries. We actually feel injured. And then here's some other things. My self-esteem, and then he adds security. If my security is threatened in any way, I get angry. You're at work, you think somebody's taking your job, you're going to get angry at that person. Your personal or sex relations have been interfered with. So here's the deal. When you're self-centered and you have the script on how your life should be, anybody that interferes with that, you're going to get angry at. And if you're a real alcoholic, you get angry a lot. And it says, so here's their example. And he says, I'm resentful at Mr. Brown. He paid attention to my wife. Well, sure, I should be angry at him. That makes sense, doesn't it? So it affects my sex relations, and I have fear. Maybe she'll leave me. She'll like him more than me, so it threatens my self-esteem, right? So he's mad at Brown for paying attention to my wife. But look at this. He told my wife of my mistress. So I have a mistress, but I'm mad at Brown for paying attention to my wife. Now, this is real alcoholism. I don't know who thought of this example. So I have a mistress. That's okay. But Brown can't pay any attention to my wife. And she told my wife of my mistress, well, that threatens my marriage, and it threatens my self-esteem because now she's going to find out and she's going to yell at me. And then Brown may get my job at the office. This is a great one. So that affects my security and self-esteem. Well, why may Brown get my job at the office? Because I'm drunk all the time and I'm not there. See, we don't see that. We just see what Brown did. Now, as we do this inventory, we're going to see our role in it. And we're going to see how we cause the resentments. Mrs. Jones, she's a nut. Who decides she's a nut? I did. Anybody know nuts in their lives? Snub me. She didn't treat me right. She committed her husband for drinking. He's my best friend. She's a gossip. She probably gossips about me. My employer, this is a good one, unreasonable, unjust, overbearing. Anybody ever have an employer like that? Threatens to fire me for drinking. How dare him threaten me? I don't show up every day, but when I'm there, I try my best. And pad the expense account. I don't come to work, but I'm mad at my boss. And it seems real. If you swore in court, you know, it was so unreasonable. He's so unreasonable. Notice the first word. This is my wife. Misunderstands and nags. So I guess that's why I have a mistress. Likes Brown. What's house put in her name? I wonder why. See, it's really good when he writes these out. These are the three columns. And you see how these things threaten you. Now, what I showed you was the fourth column. Is really what we did, but we're not there yet, okay? But you see, for all these resentments, we set the ball rolling. Either we judged incorrectly. Anger is always judgment, and it's wrong judgment. It's always wrong because it's not based on truth. Now, there's some people who did bad things, but it's always wrong to be angry, and we're going to read that. We don't have to be angry. It doesn't mean you excuse what people did. But you can forgive. And so Sandy Beach says, what do we forgive in AA? What's the level of forgiveness that's acceptable? And he says, everything, including crucifixion. Because Christ on the cross, it doesn't matter whether you're Christian or not, but the people did horrible things to this man. And he said, forgive them, they know not what they do. And so we're not making excuses for people who've done bad things, but we're going to practice forgiveness. And there's separate, when you do resentments, there are people who did harm to you, really harmed you, horrible things. But you may have used those things in a way to justify your behavior and blame them for your doing things. And I have a, I have somebody in my life that does that a lot, one of my stepdaughters. It's very hard on my wife, but you can't change the way they see things unless they want to. It says, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we consider it carefully. So you're going to consider your lives and consider these columns. Now, the first thing that was apparent was that this world and its people are often quite wrong. We always knew that. They were wrong, right? To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us got. And then we would just say, these people are wrong. We'd have justified anger, right? And the usual outcome was the people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we're sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. See, we never win if we stay angry. Or we tried to retaliate or get even. Anybody ever do that? Or we'd gossip or talk about people. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. So here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs to change my life. I've been to a lot of meetings, and I've not heard really ever discussion on the last three paragraphs that we're going to read tonight, and they changed my life. It says, it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. Now, it leads to futility and unhappiness. Why? Because when you're in a resentment, you're not with God. You're not in the now, and you're wasting time with your anger. And you can't be happy when you're angry. And it's futile and unhappiness. Remember, it says, we recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body, and we saw the futility of life as we have lived it on page 25. Remember that? And it says, to the precise extent that I permit these. Now, here's the thing. I permit the resentment. It doesn't matter what they did. I permit it. I like that book, Anger is a Choice, by Dr. Paul Lowe. And he makes the point that anger is a choice. You can get angry, but you don't have to stay there. You don't have to. You choose to stay angry. And it has some benefit to us in some way. We justify our behavior, and we stay separated from God. I squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. Wow, I squandered a lot of time being angry. I still do it some, but I try not to waste too much time. It's just futile. It's silly. And so now I have tools now that I try to stop. I used to give myself 2 minutes at work. Sometimes I do three, but I could shoot for 1 minute, you know, and 30 seconds. And sometimes when you start to get upset, you just stop right away. And then I had the God pull. At work, that I'd hold the God pole when, and then I'd settle down and have God come in and help me change the way I saw things. That worked a lot better than staying angry all day. It says, I squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. Now, if you're in a resentment, you're sitting at home and you're angry at somebody or something and they're not even in the room. Now, how stupid is that? I'll sit there stewing about something, and they're not even there. They're watching Big Bang or the KU game. I'm sitting there all worked up. It's ridiculous. It is so silly when you look at it. But to me, it was real. It was real when you're angry. But we don't want to do that anymore. It could have been the Duke game, John made a face. Do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? How much time do you waste being angry? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. Why do I want to maintain and grow a spiritual experience? Because if I don't have a spiritual experience, I have no power not to drink. So if I have resentment, I can't maintain and grow a spiritual experience, so I have no defense against drinking. Because I have no access to God's power. The resentment has blocked me from the access. And who's caused the resentment? Me. See, I have to take responsibility for holding on to the anger. It doesn't matter what happened. I don't have to get angry. The man isn't here last night. He was angry at the TV last week. And the TV was, they were saying something on TV that's going to ruin his children's lives. So the only person that told him that was going to happen was him. Now, he may not have liked what was on the TV, and I'm not trivializing it or not. But we don't have to get angry. You could just say, well, they have their opinion. Turn it off. And so this business of resentment is infinitely grave. Now, I was a cancer doctor, and cancer is infinitely grave in some cases. And infinitely grave is not good. It's not good. And in case you don't know that, it says in the next slide, it's fatal. So anything between fatal and infinitely grave is what happens when I'm angry. And then the thing is, it doesn't have to be big things, but if I'm irritable and restless and just going to get angry all the time, I don't like the way this one parked, this one's not driving fast enough, this one's talking too much, blah, 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 I'm angry all the time. There's no God in that mind. There's no direction. There's no access to power. And it says, and this is a key line, I read it a long time, but I didn't understand it. When I harbor such feelings, now a harbor is a safe place for boats in the storm. So I give my anger a safe place in my mind so it won't get out of there. Think about it. I give it safe harbor. I don't want that resentment gone. So try to come between somebody and their justified resentments. It's not pretty. If they don't see it, they're going to get angry at you, and you'll be on their list. I harbored such feelings. I shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. I don't have access to God. These are powerful lines. I don't know how they actually wrote it like this, but it's true for me today. Just because you're sober a while doesn't mean you don't react and get angry. But we don't have to stay angry. We're learning tools now that we're going to use every day in the 10th step, and I talked about that on Saturday. But what we're doing now, if you're new, you have a lot of this anger, and you'd have to see it and see the truth and learn the tools. It says, if I shut myself up for the sunlight of the Spirit, the insanity of alcohol returns, and the insanity of alcohol is that I think that I could take a drink, which is insane, isn't it? And then I drink again, and with us, to drink is to die. I'm a long way, I think, from a drink right this minute, but I won't be that long if I stay angry all the time and I stop doing this. And Ed's smiling because he knows what I'm talking about. And it says, with us, to drink is to die. Now, for me, I think I die spiritually when I stay angry. I don't feel good, and to me, I'm dying. I don't have serenity and peace. It says, so if we're to live, does anybody want to live? Everybody raise their hand. Everybody want to live? Good. So it says, I have to be free of anger. It doesn't say you can't get angry. Anger is an emotion that we're always going to have. But I want to be free of it. I don't want to be in the bondage to my anger. Remember, I asked God to relieve me of the bondage of self. Well, I don't want to be in bondage to anger. It's not pleasant. And the grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. The brainstorm was rage when this book was written. It became known as like brainstorming, you know, you're thinking up great ideas. But at the time that this book was written, it meant rage. The grouch and rage were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. So what they're saying is, I take poison hoping you die. And it's really true, the first time I heard that. And so it says, I turn back to the list. So we've looked at the first three columns. It holds the key to my future. Now, they put this in the book, and if you want to have a future in AA and with the program in 1939, you had to have a list. And you had to look at the list, and it's the key to my future. Look at that statement. It says, I'm prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Now, I think to be prepared to look at it from a different angle is a real achievement for an alcoholic. It's a form of letting go of my old ideas. And like Jimmy talks about willingness all the time back there, you have to be willing to look at it from a different angle. And if they're not willing to look at it from a different angle, you just get on their resentment list because they don't want to see it. And so when we're willing to do this, then that God's power comes in. I began to see that the world and its people really dominated me. I could see that. I'm working with somebody now. They got 200 names. That's average for a real alcoholic. I made the statement today. I can listen to a basketball game, and like Dick Vitale was bothering me a little bit last night. So I had to turn the sound down. Now, I didn't drink over it, and I didn't want, you know, he's just an old guy, and he can't see, and he talks a lot. But, you know, he's a cute guy, and I love him. But I turned the sound down. See, I know how to recognize my personality. It says, they dominate us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real. So when I see that people dominate, fancied or real, a lot of my resentments are what people think. I know what they think, and I get angry, and they haven't even told me that. I don't know if any of you have ever had any of those. We know what they're thinking. And then the other thing is my resentments, what I wrote on the list, sometimes they really weren't true. They were distorted. They were the way I saw them, but they weren't really true. It says, had the power to actually kill me. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? That's a good question, right? Does anybody want to escape from their anger? Does anybody want to master their resentments? But how? We could not wish them any more than alcohol, but look at what's in the book. And if I've done anything good at these meetings, I've talked about these two paragraphs about 18 million times. And it's helped me because I do them. It says, this was our course. So this is the course on how they mastered resentments. I realized the people who wronged me were perhaps spiritually sick. Now, spiritually sick, or I could say they're human beings, or they have their own personalities, right? It says, though I did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed me, they, like myself, were sick too. And what they're saying is that I'm a human being, they're human beings, they disturb me, but that's their personality, it's the way they are. I'm going to ask God, this is a prayer, remember, ask in the big book is a petition to God based upon true belief that it will come true. And I ask God to help me show them the same tolerance and pity and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. And what I say is the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I want to be treated with. And then I look on this as the golden rule. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Love your neighbors yourself. So I want to ask God to be able to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I want for me. And that they have their personalities, they are the way they are. When a person offended, I said to myself, this is a sick man, how can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. So I say that prayer. God, save me from being angry, thy will be done. Now, I don't like to say that they're all sick. It just works for me. I like to say that they're human beings. They are the way they are. You know, they have their personality. They make their decisions. They're self-centered too. I'm self-centered. God, save me from being angry. So I say, God, give me the tolerance, pity, and patience that I would want for me or for someone who was ill. God, save me from my anger. Now, I talked to somebody today about, should we pray for people? Well, that's in the Freedom from Bondage chapter. That was written in 1973, and that was from an article in the newspaper. I'm not saying you shouldn't pray for people. I'm not even commenting on that. I'm not giving an opinion on that. That's not what the big book says. It doesn't say you don't do it. But what we have to do is ask God to relieve me of the bondage of anger. Because I'm the one dying from my anger. Now, it's fine if you want to pray for people and this and that, but do this first. And then your prayers will be different, I guarantee you. They'll be different. You'll see them differently. God, save me from being angry. I have to be saved from my anger. Thy will be done. I avoid retaliation or argument. I wouldn't treat sick people that way. If I do, I destroy my chance of being helpful. Remember, we want to be of love and service. We want to serve all God's children. I cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show me how to take a kindly, tolerant view of everyone. And I want to stop there, and I'll go over these prayers again next week, and we'll open it up. This is powerful stuff. And these I tell you, this works. And there are people in this room who've done this, and they can tell you it works. And so we'll open it up. Hold it 1 second.
Oh, sorry.
I got to turn this off. Mm-hmm.